The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and today is the closing day feature. In episode 137 featuring Dave Ball is today's subject, where he talks about what it takes to qualify for mortgages and his thoughts on some of the most recent mortgage opportunities for African Americans by different banks. And so let's get into it. Today's closing day feature, Dave Ball from episode 137.
I personally don't think anyone could have predicted interest rates would be what they were now. Like, you know, to have a program that will need the money to fund like this, like, I just don't see how a company would say, oh, you know, well, we know rates are going to be at historic highs than they've been in the last 14 years. So let's do this program now. And to your point, it's not like a snap of a finger type of situation. And something else I want to mention too, is like, there's this outcry about this program, but no, there's no outcry about NACA, which has, in my opinion, it's a lot more difficult to get through. And it's been funded by Bank of America for the last 25, 26 years. No one is saying that though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I would say the other thing that I hear too about this program is, like I said, it's somehow set up to, for this whole concept that somehow like Bank of America wants to give out loans to people that they think would default on the loan, just so that they can come and purchase the homes from them later on. So like that also like doesn't really make a lot of sense, because if Bank of America just wanted to buy a home in minority communities, they would just buy the homes. Like they don't need to give out loans to people, hope they'll default, you know, carry the cost of the property, you know, then, you know, get the home. And if someone's not like paying their mortgage, they're probably not taking care of the home. They potentially have to like rehabbing the home, or, you know, going through selling the home at a lower cost than it was before. Like it just doesn't make any sense from that aspect. And then too, like the biggest way like banks make money off of loans is like servicing the loan and like mortgage backed securities. Right. So for folks that may or may not have a mortgage, but I have three mortgages. So in the last 10 years, I've probably called my bank like three or four times in the last 10 years, but they're making money off of servicing the loan. So it's like passive income as far as the bank's concerned. And then the other aspect is like the mortgage backed securities, where they package up a bunch of mortgages and sell them off to investors. So if they have these loans that folks are defaulting on, like it doesn't work with actually selling the loans to the investors. Like they become pretty much like they lose their value. Like there's no investor wants to buy loans that folks are going to default on like 2 or 3 years from now. So like the whole concept that they would, you know, make up this program for folks to like default on loans that they can't sell to investors, it doesn't make any sense from that aspect either. And so, like I said, I personally, I've worked at Wells Fargo, like I worked at Chase, and I've given out, like I've worked in minority communities, and I've, you know, I've given out loans to people. And so there's no decree where it's like there's some meeting where it's like, hey, you know, make sure you're targeting these people or that. Like it just still wouldn't make any sense, because, you know, like I'm just an average person. They're average people that work at these banks. Like somebody would come out and be like, hey, Bank of America came down and said that, hey, make sure you're targeting folks for this loan because this is the plan or something like that. It just doesn't really make any sense on a big scale or small scale as far as a lot of these conspiracy theories that I hear.
Yeah. And as somebody who has worked in the mortgage business for quite some time, you know, when you hear people saying, when you hear people saying they're doing this so people can foreclose, like, to me, at a high level, it doesn't seem like that would even benefit the bank. Wouldn't they benefit more if you continue to pay your mortgage for the life of the loan than if you foreclosed? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like I said, it's the ultimate passive income. It's just they give loans to solid borrowers, and they never talk to them ever again. Like that, their ideal goal of any mortgage company, anyone servicing a loan, is to give out a loan. That's why you go through such a rigorous underwriting process, and to never talk to that person ever again, unless they want to refinance. Like that's every mortgage company's optimal situation. It's just to collect money passively off the interest. So like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense they would be going through a process where it was like, where there was like a lot of like back and forth, or, you know, the potential to actually have to unfortunately foreclose on the loan. And also there's actually a lot of steps before foreclosure. Like lenders will do what's called like a loan modification when you're like a financial hardship, where you can't refinance the loan, but you also can't pay for the current loan due to your current financial situation. Like lenders will also try to like modify the loan, which is basically, and there's a couple ways to modify the loan. One is sometimes they'll forgive like a large past due balance you have. Sometimes they'll just lower the rate on the loan. And then sometimes they'll just like extend the term of the loan. So let's say you have like a 30-year loan, and like year 20, you fell on hard times. Like they may extend your loan out to 40 years. So now your $2,000 payment becomes like $1,100 or something like that. So there's a bunch of steps between giving someone a loan and foreclosure. And so like it probably takes like up to a year to foreclose on a home. So like once again, Bank of America would be losing money that whole year that someone is not paying on the loan, whether it's, you know, the property taxes, whether it's the legal fees to foreclose on the home. Like it just doesn't really make a lot of sense, I think, once you kind of really, really like dive into like what actually has to happen for a mortgage company to actually foreclose on somebody's home.
Right. And, you know, something else is people keep saying, oh, this is why the 2008 crash happened. You know, this is 2008 all over again. But what's important for people to understand is like, it was a different time back then. Anybody who breathed, anybody who could write their name on a paper, anybody with a pulse was able to get a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
There was the Wild Wild West back then. Like people were getting qualified. People were getting approved for mortgages who literally couldn't qualify and nobody cared. However, what's important for people to understand is there's been a lot more regulation put in place. It's a lot more of a rigorous process to get approved for a mortgage since then. And it's going to be the same thing with this program. Like how would it benefit the bank to approve somebody who can't actually afford the mortgage? Like if the mortgage is $3,000, and your income is $3,500. And if you think you're going to get approved for this program, you're out of your mind. Like it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So how do you respond to that?
Yeah. So we look back at 2008, there were basically two big things as far as 2008. As you mentioned on it, like the reckless lending habits. It was like, hey, if you say you make $10,000 a month, you make $10,000 a month. There's no income verification or anything like that. And then the other part, there was just like so much inventory. Builders were building, and there was just this massive amount of inventory back in 2008 compared to now. And so like we're on the exact opposite now. So like mortgage guidelines are just a lot stricter than they were in 2008. I think if folks remember, like when COVID hit, like Chase was actually one of the banks that actually like very, very, very tightened their lending habits. They require lenders to have like a 700 credit score and 20% down. So like banks have actually gone the exact opposite way, and they've gone back to their normal lending habits now. But yeah, it takes a lot more to qualify for a loan now than it did back in 2008. It's like one of the things I hear is folks would be like, hey, well, they're doing like no credit check. So it's not like no credit check. It's not like, hey, we're not looking at your credit at all. That's not a thing. Like similar to, as you mentioned in the beginning, like Bank of America, you know, they underwrite like the NACA loan. So they have experience working with alternative credit. And so a couple of things as far as the loan, it basically goes by like the conventional loan guidelines for the most part outside of credit. So you still need a 50% or less debt to income ratio. Your debt to income ratio is your monthly finance debts, like your minimum payments, like on car payments, student loans, stuff like that, plus your future mortgage payment divided by your income before taxes. That needs to be 50% just like a conventional loan. And then the other part as far as like credit, so they'll use like the non-traditional credit as far as like utilities, car payments and stuff like that. However, like it's not just like, hey, you paid your car payment, you're good to go. You need to have like three trade lines as far as you basically mean to have like three trade lines or three credit scores. And then also you cannot have any late within like the last 6 months on your credit report. That's why they need to see your credit report. And so if you have a late in the last 6 months, you know, sorry about that. You can't get the loan. And in the last 12 months, you can only have like one 30-day late on your entire credit report. And so basically you can have a late between like month six and month 12, just one 30-day late, which is a lot. I mean, you can apply for normal loans, conventional FHA, and have lates like within the last, I mean, it'll impact your credit score, but you can have lates, you know, applying for a conventional loan or FHA loan. So they're basically looking at like your habits, not necessarily your credit score, but they're actually like looking at your habits. So another big difference with this loan is that it's manually underwritten, meaning that the underwriter is actually looking at every aspect of the loan. Like with there's two types of underwriting. There's manual underwriting where an underwriter is like looking at every document and they're making the decision. Then there's automated underwriting where your information is plugged into like a computer system. And then the underwriter is verifying that the correct stuff was put into the system. But in this situation, they're actually going through all your documents and basically giving you a thumbs up or thumb down as far as this loan. So it's still a strenuous like qualification process. It's not just like a paper stamp like they were doing back in the, you know, the, like you said, the wild, wild west of the 08s, 07s, that time frame.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.